Welcome to Econoday Unplugged. Each week, our expert team explains the relationship between economic announcements and market reaction. For over 25 years, Econoday has provided value for the investment industry, amassing a comprehensive, machine-readable database of global market events. Econoday provides solutions for macroeconomics, sovereign debt, agricultural commodities, and historical data, all delivered via API, XML, and HTML. Connect the dots with Econoday. Subscribe to the Econoday Unplugged podcast and go to www.econoday.com to follow market events. Hello and welcome to Econoday Unplugged. It's Tuesday, the 4th of June, 2019. Mark Pender's across the pond stateside and I'm Jeremy Hawkins here in London. Well, it's not been a particularly pretty picture in financial markets in recent days, with worries about the potential economic damage of a global trade war really starting to bite and seemingly increasing risk, of course. There's no solution to the problem anytime soon. The Dow's fallen for six consecutive weeks for the first time in 8 years. Bond yields are tumbling. The dreaded R word is becoming more than a whisper, and at least one regional Fed president is warning that rates may have to be cut soon. All of which, of course, makes Friday's US employment report even more important than usual. So, Mr. Pender, is it likely to be good news, or do we reach for our tin helmets?
No, it's going to probably, at least the forecasters think, it's going to be very good news. A consensus at 180,000 non-farm payroll gain, that would be down from an outsized 263,000, but the 180 would be really right, pretty much where they want them. Employment growth to be, it's enough to take a new entrance into the labor market. And earnings in the report are looking to warm up just maybe slightly. 0.3% monthly gain is the Econoday consensus for a year-on-year rate. However, that would be unchanged at 3.2%. Now, we also had Jerome Powell speaking today.
Indeed, I'll ask you about that. In fact, just before you move on to Mr. Powell, can I quickly ask you? Uh-huh. I talked about in the intro about this Fed guy talking about the possibility of rate cut. That's James Bullard. Where's he uh-huh. stand on the Hawk Dove platform, and is he a leading indicator of the rest of the Fed?
No, but he's varied in the past. He's a long-time participant. But, he's obviously a dove now. And actually, Powell's maybe perhaps sounding dovish, but he did make the comment this morning that persistently low inflation could erode inflation expectations. And this is a repeated theme for Jerome Powell, is the importance of inflation expectations. He sees them as a self-fulfilling prophecy for inflation in general. So for him to have said that does, and that's a step back from where he was speaking earlier in early May, when he was downplaying the risk that core inflation could slip. But now we didn't see the bounce back that we were waiting for. And so that concern, and it's a global concern. We just had the Reserve Bank of Australia cut rates today. And we may get the Bank of India to cut rates tomorrow or on Thursday. So it seems to be the global slowing manufacturing. We see it in the PMIs, whether it's the ISM in the U.S., which is at several years low, or it's in Germany, the manufacturing PMI there at 44.3. That's kind of almost like a warning. So we see that, and we see inflation not having any traction at all. We have the risk of contracting global trade, and it's been a theme. It seems to be building, escalating, but now the stock market's rallying today. So, if the Fed does, the Fed is expected to cut rates this year. And those expectations have been building very quickly within the last week. And so now we're talking perhaps about one in July or sometime in mid-year.
Which is quite a big change around from where mm-hmm. we were not very long ago, as you said in the past. But how much of this do you think is to do with this uncertainty surrounding all this, trade war talk? And, well, obviously we've got tariffs dotted around everywhere as at the moment. But how important is this international trade situation, do you think, to Fed policy?
Well, how important has it been in the unfolding of economic data so far this year? We're seeing an effect. It's hard to actually pin down these effects in the economic data. But we are seeing a global decline in manufacturing samples, and that's what you would guess that you would see if trade was constricting. And you do see a lot of the reports of merchandise trade reports. You're seeing declines in both exports and imports for many of these countries, including the U.S. in the latest data. So that's another sign. But it's not you know, clobbering people over the head with its obviousness yet. And a lot of these trade issues, whether it's Mexico or whether it's China, these tariffs are just in the initial process now of ratcheting up. Mm-hmm. So it's a big unknown. I think the Fed central bankers have to step back, have to make sure that they take it seriously, and that it could create no effect, a limited effect, or a significant effect.
Difficult times to be an FOMC or indeed any kind of central banker at the moment. Mm-hmm. Okay, then. Well, let's have a look at a central bank on this side of the water. We have an ECB meeting on Thursday, where no change is expected in terms of the sort of major policy levers there. But in line with what Mark's just been saying, it's coming increasingly now, rather than talk about, well, when will these interest rates finally go up, as to perhaps, well, are they going to have to provide some additional accommodation? Now, I think at this stage, it's unlikely we'll see the ECB, you know, moving away from its policy platform already outlined for essentially the rest of the year. So the REFI rate, the key benchmark rate in the Eurozone, being kept at 0% right through December time. And the balance sheet, at least in terms of the quantitative easing side of it, that being held steady well beyond this December of this year.
But however, how could they hint at it then?
Well, I think what to look for in this is going to be what they do with their economic forecasts. So we're round to the quarterly set of forecasts that the ECB puts out. They're currently operating what they call this downside risk assessment, which means if they get their forecasts wrong, it's more likely to be on the downside than the upside. Now, there's been a string of downward revisions to these forecasts over the last year or so. And I must say, I think in light of recent economic numbers, the chances are that we'll see some fresh downward revisions again on Thursday. They may not be major, but it was the last time we saw that which led to the introduction of this kind of tweaking in the forward guidance and the decision to introduce some new targeted longer-term repo operations later in this year. So if we do see them again downgrading their economic assessment this week, market's going to start thinking, well, look, this is a leading indicator that some kind of softening of policy may not be too far away. Now, it may not be in terms of interest rates or anything quite as bold as that, but you know, they're looking around to see what else they can do.
Now, how is Draghi, now that we had, what's his position right now after the elections?
Well, Draghi at the moment is still there until we get into the end of October. So that's officially the end of his term. And then the big question becomes, who's going to be the new Mr. Draghi? And it's got to be said, at this stage, there's still the horse trading going on, and we really don't know. What we do know is that as we get into Thursday's meeting, we'll have a new chief economist. Now, previously, that's been a guy called Peter Pratt, who was really one of the architects behind the sort of the non-standard monetary measures we've seen being introduced by the ECB pretty well since the Great Recession, the big financial downturn, a decade or so ago now. And he's been very much the supporter of Mario Draghi, and the two have been really instrumental in pushing forward some kind of measures, crucially forms of quantitative easing that some more hawkish members, say Germany in particular, wouldn't have been very keen to do. Now, Peter Pratt will be replaced by Philip Lane, who was previously the head of the Irish Central Bank. And he's known to be something of a sort of an intellectual and to some extent outside the box thinker. Typically speaking, he's regarded as being relatively dovish, but he's also someone who's kind of hinted in the past that, it's not necessarily right just to stick to, the same policy year in, year out, that being this near 2% inflation target. So it's certainly not as any revolutionary in terms of that at this stage, but it's something to bear in mind that when we do get this new chief economist coming in, over the course of coming months and quarters, he's the sort of guy who will be, basically intimating to the governing council that, well, look, perhaps now we need to start thinking about some kind of shift on the basis of monetary policy because our current one perhaps isn't working as well as it could be. So it's going to be may not be the most exciting ECB meeting in terms of big moves on rates or anything like that, because we won't get any. But do keep an eye on what the central bank's saying about its forecasts. What else we got then over here? Well, I suppose I should mention the UK. And we've had some slightly iffy numbers out of the UK. And again, this is fitting in with what Mark was talking about, the risk of more interest rate cuts or slowing global growth, particularly via the PMIs. We had the May manufacturing PMI, and that was surprisingly weak, well below 50. And the highlight of this really was that it very much underlined the fact that there's been a lot of precautionary Brexit-inspired stock building taking place, which has led to a bounce in orders, a bounce in output, and certainly misleadingly strong PMI readings over the first few months of the year. So May's gone the other way, and it seems to have gone the other way, partly because it's, businesses now know that Brexit has basically been put on hold until at least the end of October under the latest extension, and they've probably got enough stocks for the time being anyway. So it kind of suggests that the big figures we saw for manufacturing output in January and February, where it increased almost 2% over the 2 months, they're misleadingly strong, and it warns that the second quarter could be a bit of a nasty one. So again, it's difficult to see the Bank of England doing it at the moment, because they want to know what the heck's going to happen to Brexit. But it does suggest that rather than interest rates going up in the UK, as the bank's been intimating for a long time, the next move might be down.
Well, we also had weak PMIs, the global PMI yesterday. What was that? That came in at 49.8, so that's below 50.
Yeah.
And we had weak, besides the UK, the Swiss didn't look very good, and Japan as well. They're at 40. They're also at 49.8. The manufacturing. So we're getting this flat now movement. The ISM, like I had said, was also going lower, and the PMI market PMI is in 50. It's in the just above 50. So we're really getting a very strong signal from the manufacturing sector, which is traditionally considered to be the sector that leads other sectors. So
I think that's right. Yeah. And also it's because of this big downturn in manufacturing. And although it may be a relatively small part of certainly the industrialized economies, it's seen as a sort of leading indicator still of what's going to happen to GDP as a whole. And I think, looking, it's interesting at what's happening on the foreign exchanges at the moment. Something that's been noticeable over the course of the last week or so, there's been a relatively big move coming through in Euro Swiss in favor of the Swiss franc. So the Swiss now is trading against the euro at the kind of levels that the SNB, the Swiss National Bank's not going to be at all happy with. Because remember, like most of the rest of the industrialized world at the moment, Swiss inflation is still very low. It's only running around about half a percentage point or so. And the SNB has been desperately trying to get that rate to move back up towards somewhere near the 2% mark, a bit like the ECB. And the stronger Swiss franc, all that serves to do is dampen economic activity at home and, of course, dampen import prices. But it's moving up because you seem to be getting this move now that people don't know what's happening to the general economy, the global economy. They're getting more nervous. They're seeking safe haven. And, of course, ring the bell as soon as you get to talk about Europe. It's the Swiss franc which tends to win out.
And the yen in Asia. Oh, that reminds me, we're talking about manufacturing. We have a Boeing 737 cancellations have yet to take. We just had the factory orders report
about
today.
That. How important is that going to be?
We don't know. Some forecasters have really dire, massive contraction penciled in the upcoming factory orders reports. So in cancellations and related effects to the Boeing 737 grounding. But that's an unknown. Actually, aircraft has had a pretty good year so far in the data. But throw that in with everything else, and you can see, I think, why central bankers have to take a defensive position right now.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, I suppose I should quickly mention about Brexit since I've mentioned it for a while. Not really so much in the purely context of Brexit, but what's going on in terms of UK politics. If folks remember, this Friday, so June the 7th, will be the day that Theresa May stands down as the leader of the Conservative Party, and that officially kicks off the challenge then for who's going to be her replacement. In terms of what's happened so far, we were at one point, I think, up to 11 candidates who put their hats in the ring. At least one's dropped out now. And in terms of sort of the favourites for this, and this is the person who clearly is going to have to pick up the ball in terms of the Brexit negotiations, Boris Johnson and the Environment Secretary, Michael Gove. Now, I think many people have heard of Boris Johnson. He's very much a sort of a character figure in politics over here. But crucial for financial markets, is going to be their attitude towards Brexit. Now, as far as Johnson's concerned, well, basically he is a Brexiteer, and he's intimated that if anything, if push comes to shove, he's prepared to pull the UK out of the European Union without a trade deal. By some contrast, Michael Gove, who also is a Brexiteer, but he's much more of a compromiser. He hasn't actually fully set out his plan yet, but the indications are that he's prepared to delay Brexit, if he can get away with it, until late 2020, rather than leave without a deal. Now, if things continue to stand like that, then as we go through this Tory party leadership challenge, and it could take what's up to 6 weeks or so for it to finally be realised, depending upon how many candidates we still have in when it actually starts properly. But it would mean that probably as far as financial markets concerned, if Michael Gove looks like he's going to win, that could be a small plus factor as far as the pound's concerned. If Boris Johnson wins, there's going to be more concerns that, well, look, we may be leaving without a trade deal, and that's not good for anyone. So that certainly could be bad news for the pound, potentially bad news for the euro as well, because it's not good for them either, and even more problems as far as the Swiss National Bank's concerned. Okay, any else we should be talking about? I don't think so. You mentioned, Mark mentioned RBA cut today, 25 basis points, a new record low there. And on Thursday, the expectation is for a 25 basis point cut from the RBI to 5.75%. And that would be significant to the extent that would be the third cut in a row. And we haven't seen that since 2013. So again, wherever you look around the world at the moment, it does seem as if central banks are really starting to scratch their head and wonder what they're going to do. Because for many countries, interest rates simply can't go down much further.
And really, the ECB is a lagging here, are they? I mean,
They've got a problem in terms of the interest rate side of it. And the good news about, from the Fed's angle, they might have wanted to see interest rates higher before they had to start cutting. But at least you've got interest rates. Yeah, as far true. As these ECB's got a zero refi rate and a big chunk of a shorter end of the curve is already negative territory. So their deposit rate still stands at minus 0.4%. And to all intents and purposes, up until now, the ECB essentially has said, well, that's, they're at their lower bound. They can't really take rates any lower. So it really does mean if we get this downturn, starting to gain momentum, some of these central banks are really going to be scratching their heads as to, what they're going to do.
More unconventional policy, more printing money, buying bonds.
Or more pressure on fiscal policy to reflate or something like that, as if there wasn't enough debt around already. Interesting times. Okay, that's it then. So for today, on behalf of Mark and myself, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week when hopefully, the news might be a little bit brighter, not least regarding the England cricket team, which lost yesterday's World Cup match against Pakistan. Sob. Bye for now. Econoday has provided value for the investment industry for over 25 years, amassing a comprehensive, machine-readable database of global market events. Our exceptional dataset consists of consensus, actual reported, and revised numbers of economic events. Algorithmic trading firms, global banks, asset managers, hedge funds, and AI technology firms are leveraging Econoday's unique historical dataset to fuel their proprietary trading models and support their research and compliance teams. Go to www.econoday.com and follow @Econoday on Twitter to learn more.